James Breslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everyone, to the James Breslow Show, coming off of a nice long Independence Day weekend here in sunny Southern California. Thank you all for joining us. This hour, we've got Kent Moyer, CEO of the World Protection Group, a worldwide security expert. Lots of things to discuss with him, including a bit about guns. We had another shooting over the weekend, not just over the weekend, but on July 4th of all days, at a July 4th neighborhood parade of all things. Really disgusting. Another screwed up young man, no doubt raised in a screwed up home, put a bunch of screwed up things on the internet that didn't seem to catch anyone's attention. It's amazing what a great job social media does of regulating conservative speech, or anybody who dares to suggest that you shouldn't take a vaccine or you should be concerned about a vaccine. That they do a great job of immediately taking that down. But when it comes to these teenagers ranting about wanting to kill school children, nobody seems to raise an eyebrow. And next thing you know, they do it. I think we're definitely seeing a pattern here of these type of screwed up kids. They all seem to be 18. This kid was 22. All using the same type of rifles, same type of magazines, and shooting people up. Crazy stuff. We need to figure out how to shut these kids down. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not opposed to some additional gun control laws, that's for sure. Guns are part of the problem because they are using the guns, but the kids part of the problem too. And I've said this many times, that the breakdown of the nuclear family in America is a big problem. The idea of having two parents at home, nobody seems concerned about that. The idea of having at least one of the two parents who kind of pays more attention and is at home with the kids, parenting them, no one cares about that. Most important thing is that everybody's out in the workforce. In fact, that was a quote by someone in the Biden administration who talked about the importance of having parents working, especially mothers. I swear to you, this is a quote, especially mothers, how important it is to have them in the workforce. What is it that the left has with wanting everybody to be out there in the workforce? I thought they're the ones that are anti-capitalism. Or is this a communist thing where everybody's out supposed to be supporting the state and putting in their labor for the state? I don't know, but it sure seemed that children came out a bit better when there was more nuclear families, father and mother, which we definitely had back in the 50s, 60s. I don't know the whole history of the change, but there's been significant change in the number of single parent households from that period till today. And we also know that both parents or a single parent are out in the workforce. So who's raising these children? They're being raised in daycare centers, if they're lucky, or being left at home. We got 330 million people in America and growing quickly as the border is wide open. So these kids are pouring into the country. Not that these were immigrants, I want to be clear about that, or illegal immigrants. I don't think any of these recent shooters have been illegal immigrants. But the point is, they're being raised in screwed up homes. And we have lost the emphasis or recognition of the importance of a loving father and a loving mother at home. Part of this is the LGBTQ push. And the reason the left loves that push is they like the breakdown of the nuclear family. Kind of weird. That was right there on the Black Lives Matter website front page, that we support the, I forget the word they used. They took it down eventually, by the way, because they got so much flack for it. But they call it a patriarchal society that actually has a mother and father at home. They support the destruction of the nuclear family, I think is the way they put it. The destruction of the nuclear family. Why do they feel that way? Why do they want that destroyed? Because they want all power centered in government. Don't want religion, don't want families. So LGBT is good for them because LGBT is not traditional families. LGBT rejects the idea that there's some value, inherent value to a loving father and a loving mother. They would argue that, no, as long as it's equally the same to have two mothers or two fathers, equally good. No difference whatsoever between a child being raised by a loving father and a loving mother on the one hand versus a loving father and a loving father or a loving mother and a loving mother. And once you buy into that, then it's like, well, as long as you've got a loving person, why do you need two? So at least as long as you have one loving person at home. But when that loving person is a single parent and they have to be working to support the family, then who's home to raise the child? So we've always had guns, but we've never had this level of violence. But as I said, I'm open to looking at these guns because they seem to be these high capacity magazines and these AR-15s, etc., sure do seem to do a lot of damage very, very quickly. We saw it in Las Vegas, where he managed to kill 59 people, the Las Vegas shooter. I think he shot between 550 and 600. And he had a lot of AR-15s and a lot of magazines. All of them he got legally. So something needs to be done. Let me turn my attention to some good news. We need more good news these days. This comes to us from The Week magazine. The Week magazine, little item in there. They like to cover good news in there sometimes, so I'm just going to cover this because we've had two depressing stories already. California Vicky Umudo was searching for home goods online when she came across a listing for furniture for a furniture set being given away for free. A family told her they were clearing out their house of a relative who had just passed away. After hauling the set home that she had gotten for free, she gave the cushions a close inspection and pulled out an envelope stuffed with cash. It was one of several stashes hidden in the furniture that she had just been given for free. The total amount of cash? $36,000 in cash that had been stuffed in this sofa by the relative of the people who gave it to her, who had passed away. And apparently, unbeknownst to anyone, she was hiding cash in her couch. $36,000. What did Vicky do? What would you do? What would you do? Vicky immediately returned the money to the family. As a way of saying thanks, they gave her a $2,200 reward, but she said that she wasn't expecting a dime from them. Wow. Hope we all would have done the same. That's my take on the news, TNT Radio.
Stay in the loop all day.
I'm the only radio station that helps me through a long day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we have with us, I hope, Kent Moyer, CEO, World Protection Group. Kent, are you there?
Yes, James. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I know you're a good friend of my producer, Cece, and appreciate you coming on the show to talk about some of the latest news. Why don't you first start by kind of telling us what your group does, so people know your background. I know you have a very, very long history in private security on an international level. I notice in particular that your group is in Shanghai and in Mexico City. I would love for us to talk a little bit about security issues in Shanghai and Mexico City. But just give us a quick background on the company.
So the company was started in 2001 when I moved out to California, probably over 25 years ago. I was a martial artist. I had a martial arts school, and I got into the protection field because people thought way back then, if you're a great fighter, you're a great protector. Well, that's not true. But my first job in the industry was with Hugh Hefner protecting him at the Playboy Mansion. 2001, you know, fast forward 2001, I started my own company.
Hold on, Ken. Hold on. We can't fast forward. Yep. We can't fast forward past Hugh Hefner. Give us a little. I'm glad you brought it up because I noticed it in the bio and I was going to bring it up myself. I was fortunate. First, let me tell you my little quick Hugh story. I was fortunate enough to visit the Playboy Mansion for one of the Midsummer Night Dream Party. And this is when he was still alive, but he didn't have many years to go. But I do consider myself fortunate to have at least visited for one of their truly big parties, not one of these like corporate events that they rented out for, but a true traditional Playboy party, the Midsummer Night's Dream Party. And Hugh was still with us and was at the party. And I'll never forget because, I mean, it really, that place is really a special place. I mean, it was an amazing, cool vibe to it. He had lots of like older playmates walking around, you know, that had been, you know, Miss July, you know, 1973 and so on. Everybody dressed to the nines. Everybody's super friendly. Everybody having a good time. Nothing wild and crazy going on. I think I probably missed that era of the wild and craziness of the grotto. But anyway, it was just a really cool experience. And I'm just happy that I got to have it before it all came to an end. So just give us a little taste of your experience at the mansion.
Yeah, I met the head of security. I was working at the corporate office at Playboy, and I met the head of security wanted me to protect several playmates at an event at USC. And, you know, I told him a little bit about my background, and obviously he thought, wow, I want a guy that was, I was still fighting in the ring as a karate guy. And so then I got up there. But when I got up there, I suddenly realized it's not about fighting and martial arts and whether you can carry a gun or not. It really is about getting formal training, because no matter what background you come from, whether you're a Navy SEAL, military, SWAT team, you're not trained in protection and you have to retrain yourself in the protection work. So fortunately, Playboy paid for most of my training, and I graduated in a number of schools over a period of time. But a lot of fun stories. Hef was a class act. I can't say anything negative about him. You know, I was there when they were, he and Kimberly were going through a divorce, a little bit of a difficult time, but, you know, very respectful, treated women very well. You know, there's some stories coming out now after he's passed away, but I got to tell you, I was there almost 6 years. So nothing but fun stories and a lot of great people. And a lot of the playmates I'm still friends with and still have interaction with over the years.
That's cool. Do you don't want to give us any dirt on Hugh, but do you want to comment on the fact that Playboy now puts transgender in the magazine? Is that something that Hugh would have supported, you think?
I don't think Hugh would have liked that. And I think that, you know, some of those decisions obviously are very different than he would have looked at it. You know, and I think he'd probably be rolling in his grave about doing that. You know, obviously the new owners, which I know the new owners, they certainly have to make decisions what they feel is best for this generation, the younger generation, certainly understand that. And if it benefits them financially, but also, you know, could lead to people that are, you know, that have been long-term followers of the magazine. I remember I was a key holder. I think it was age 18 or something like that. I think that some people seeing some of the changes that may turn them off of, you know, buying a magazine or going online and viewing it or whatever. So, but
yeah, he had, what didn't I, he have I a, must, a, did he have a daughter that was, but didn't he have a daughter that was higher up in the organization? And did she actually run it for a while after he passed away?
Well, his daughter ran it for a while when I was there. And then later when the company was sold, she stepped down. And I don't know what she's doing now. I think she lives in Chicago. I think she was married to a senator, if I remember correctly. And he has two sons, Marston and Cooper. They were both very young when I they were I think it was, I'm not sure whether it was Marston or Cooper that were involved with Playboy and had a position with Playboy up until recently, when, you know, maybe like a short time after he passed away, they stepped down from that position. But they were young kids when I was there.
Was the magazine not sold until after his death?
I forget the timetable on that. I think it stopped after he passed away, but I could be wrong on that. You know, it
was, and then who are the guys that own it now, and do they also own the mansion now?
It's owned by a gentleman by the name of Suhail Rizvi, Rizvi Traverse Management. Ben Cohn is the CEO of Playboy. The mansion. So the story with the mansion was that Hef owned the mansion, and then he bought a property right next to the mansion for his wife to live there when they separated and then eventually divorced. That property was sold to, I forget the guy's name, but another businessman. And then that businessman approached Hef, you know, during the time he was alive and said, I want to buy the mansion. And so he bought the mansion during that time that Hef was still alive. And the arrangement was when Hef passes away, you know, they can live there and stay there until he passes away. And then he would take over the property. I think it's relatively easy to find his name on. I think he's a Greek guy, but a wealthy business guy. And since that time, I've been told that he has remodeled the entire mansion and the other house that he would own. I don't know whether he's combined the both properties or what.
Yeah. It was a beautiful property, beautiful backyard, and of course the grotto area, and then his little zoo. I think I got to walk through the zoo a bit. He kept a bunch of animals on the property, yeah. Right?
A lot of birds. He had a big cage full of squirrel monkeys and, you know, and even like average people, if they wanted to take a tour of the mansion, Sunday was the day. So if you had a connection that you knew somebody at Playboy, Sunday morning, they would say, okay, you come up at 9 o'clock and take a quick tour of the mansion, you know, meaning the not inside the house or anything, but the entire property. So it was kind of cool. You know, I had some friends that went up and did a tour of the mansion at that time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, let's cover a few things that I was hoping to cover, and if there's anything you wanted to cover, we'll get into that. But, you know, as I said in the open, you know, guns are a big deal right now with these shootings that we're having, every few days, it seems like there's definitely something weird in the air right now, and definitely seems like they kind of build upon each other. We've gone through these periods before, it seems, where there's just these one shooting after another, and for all we know, that's what's putting it in some of these young kids' heads because they're seeing all the attention that these guys are getting. So it's putting gun control on the front of people's minds. I think Congress just passed a new measure that didn't seem to have a lot of stuff in it. In fact, some people were expecting that they were going to ban the purchase of guns by people under 21, but it didn't do that. It basically just added some extra level of scrutiny, I think, if you're under 21. And then we have the Supreme Court ruling that came out that said that in New York, this ban that they've had for a very long time, and a number of states had this ban, including California, of concealed carry, that was violated people's Second Amendment rights. So now you cannot limit concealed carry. But I do have a question for you about that before we dig into that subject. I'm confused when they talk about concealed carry. Are there two types of carry? There's carrying it when it's concealed and carrying it when it's not concealed. And there's laws against, but help me understand that.
Well, some states you're allowed to carry exposed, and some states, so in the state of California, it is relatively difficult to get a concealed weapons permit. So in the security world, we can carry and we have to have a permit, which is called an exposed firearms permit. We get that permit through the Bureau of Security Investigation Services. Now, to get a concealed weapons permit, you have to live in a city or county and where that police chief or the sheriff is very friendly to issue CCW permits, concealed weapons permits. So now with this,
let me just interrupt though and ask you. So, so there's two types of there's concealed and there's exposed.
Exposed permits for the security industry.
Okay, but as far as just in, let's just say let's forget security for a second. If you know, hopefully you do. I'm just a regular Joe Blow, and I want to own a gun. Okay, so and let's say we're in the state of California. So yeah, you can own a gun in California, lots of restrictions on it, but you got to get licensed and all that. And you can have a gun and you can keep it in your house. Now, let's say I'm Joe Blow, Californian, and I want to take my gun out of my house. I want to take it in the car with me or walking down the street. Is it possible for me to do that in California? At least not in the past?
Not walking down the street. Down the street. In the car. If you're going to the local gun range, you have to have the gun with the magazine and the actual physical part of the gun separated and no bullets in the magazine and have it in a locked box in the trunk of your car.
Okay.
So you would be able to
whether it's concealed or car. Yeah, but so as far as the walking down the street part, whether it's concealed or not, I'm not allowed to have a gun with me.
No, you have to only in California, you can only have a concealed weapons permit and carry concealed. You would not be allowed to carry exposed.
But am I able as Joe Blow to get a concealed permit in California?
It depends on where you live. Like Los Angeles County, the Los Angeles County Sheriff is issuing concealed weapons permits. If you're in LA City, you probably won't get one from LAPD. Orange County Sheriff in Orange County in the county, it's relatively easy to get a concealed weapons permit. So it depends on where you live. And then you can easily find out whether that police chief or the sheriff of the county will issue the permit. And it does take a while. It's a process and paperwork, background checks, shooting qualification to make sure you can shoot the gun properly, and then you would have on the concealed weapons permits which guns you're able to carry, the serial number, things like that.
And real quick, and then we got to take a break. And what about exposed? You're saying that no, you would never get a license to carry it exposed.
No, there is no exposed permit except for the security industry. And the exposed permit with the security industry allows me, if I'm wearing a security shirt with a badge on the front, two shoulder patches, I can carry it in my car to and from work. I can walk down the street. It identifies that you're private security and you're authorized to carry that weapon.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take our break and we'll be back more with Kent Moyer, CEO of World Protection Group on the James Breslow Show, TNT Radio.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
And welcome back, everybody, to the James Breslow Show on TNT Radio. We're speaking with Kent Moyer. He's the CEO of World Protection Group. Trying to understand how these laws are going to be changing thanks to this United States Supreme Court ruling that says that states cannot deny individuals the ability to carry a gun. So, in understanding the difference between concealed and exposed, to me, it seems, if anything, it should be easier to carry it exposed, because then everybody knows you've got a gun, as opposed to carrying it concealed, in which case people don't know you have a gun. So I guess I'm still a little confused on this distinction that cities or states make between allowing you to carry it concealed versus carrying it exposed.
Yeah, I think Texas, you're allowed to carry exposed, and there are a few other states that I believe you can carry exposed. And I don't know or know whether you actually need the permit there to carry exposed. And even in some states, I think they've eliminated even having a concealed weapons permits license, so you can just carry. So and it changes all the time, so it's very difficult to keep up with the changes.
Right. But under the Supreme Court ruling, they're saying, no, they can no longer totally prohibit you from carrying a concealed weapon. I guess that leaves open the question, could they prohibit you from carrying it exposed? But again, maybe you can help me on what is the difference between concealed and exposed? It doesn't seem to be, A, that big of a difference, and B, I think I'd kind of rather know if a guy is carrying a gun versus not carrying a gun. I think it should be easier to carry it exposed than concealed, no?
I think I totally understand exactly how you feel. I think if I were walking down a street and I saw everybody with a gun, I would think in my mind, who is the bad guy and who is the good guy? And I think obviously in California, people would freak out over that, as you well know. Our laws out here are just extreme when it comes to weapons. I just saw in the state of New York where the governor now is going to put restrictions on where you can carry the concealed weapon. And if I saw it correctly, they're almost eliminating most places where you can carry a concealed weapon. I don't know whether that's going to hold up in court, but already they're starting to do what they can to modify their laws to make it, again, very difficult to get, even if you get the concealed weapon, where you can carry.
Right. Yeah, that's the backdoor way of responding to what the Supreme Court did, because I think the court said that it's okay to restrict them in particular areas such as a school, but you can't have broad restrictions. So the state of New York probably is going to pick as many possible places as they can to say you can't carry it here, to the point where, what would be the point of carrying it, right? If you can't take it anywhere, then you're less likely to carry it to begin with. So I imagine they're probably going to say retail stab. Yeah.
So this is my feeling. Guns laws are for good guys that want to adhere to the laws. The criminals don't care about what your gun laws are. They don't care that you can't carry, that you haven't been able to carry a gun in schools since 1992, but we still have school shootings. When a person is going to commit a mass murder, they don't care what the weapons laws are. And as you well know, we just had a shooting over the weekend, and the individual who did the shooting passed every background check on every gun that he bought. And in addition, bought the guns in a legal manner. So we can keep going back and forth in this in terms of the restriction of guns. But it is my own belief that criminals just don't care. When they're out to commit a crime, they're not thinking about, oh, well, I can't go to the school to commit the crime because of the gun laws.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as you point out, this guy got it legally. I don't know how old he was when he got it. I know he's now 22. So I don't know if he got it when he was 21 or 20 or what have you. But and he also, I think that did he use an AR-15 in this, as far as you know?
It was a high powered rifle. I don't think I read it was an AR-15, but I could be wrong. He had two of those and he had several handguns. So when he did the shooting from the roof of that of the location where at the parade, he left the gun there. Then obviously he went to his house, he got a car, and then he put another rifle in the car. I don't think they had a couple handguns when they arrested him. The handguns they found later at the house.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we all would have preferred that this idiot and those other idiots have not gotten a gun, right? 1,000%. I don't think there's any American who would say that it was cool that this guy got a gun. We would rather these guys not gotten guns, considering what their intention was. When they bought these guns, it seems pretty clear what their intention was. In particular, Uvalde, I don't think he had them. He bought them not that long before the shooting. So these are all screwed up, deranged, effed up kids, essentially, getting high-powered rifles with the intention of mowing down school children, innocent people celebrating July 4th, etc. So it seems to me something's broken here. I mean, shouldn't there be some element of the background check that would possibly disclose this? So why aren't these background checks catching these guys that are majorly effed up kids?
Because background checks don't typically connect to psychological, like the mental health part. So there's a couple things that can be done. And in the state of California, if you're going to be a licensed security officer and you want to get an exposed firearms permit, you have to take a psychological test. Our company, we do psychological assessments on everybody because most of our people carry guns. In that psychological assessment, it will determine whether you have post-traumatic stress syndrome. It will determine whether you have mental illness. It will determine whether you have drug alcohol problems. It will determine whether you're a narcissist. It will determine a lot of things that in any type of interview would not be detected. So what I think would be great if we could do this nationwide, when you conduct the background check, there is one check box, and that box is from the mental health people. Because if the guy was in a mental institution, he was 5150, which you go in for a 72 hour hold, there was an assessment on him, maybe he made some threats, where the psychiatrist and the psychologist could say yes or no on the gun. And you don't have to know what the diagnosis is. He's a schizophrenic, he's bipolar, whatever. But it would allow you to then to have that yes or no on a gun from that psychological problem that he has. And that would help. The other thing.
How sensitive? Sorry, just quick question about that. How sensitive are those tests? In other words, have you seen people in that you were associated with who went in to get their exposed carry license and it was denied for mental health reasons?
I have not seen it through BSIS because I would not be able to get that information. But with our own company, if we interview 50 people, 25 will never pass the psychological assessment. And these are people that even maybe former military or law enforcement.
Wow. You're saying just based on your gut experience in interviewing people, yes, and knowing people and knowing this test, that about half the people you interview would be denied?
Yes. So I will also tell you that in the private security world, most security companies, we do full background checks, criminal, civil. We look at their social media. We do drug testing and the psychological assessments. Most security companies don't do it. You know why they don't do it? Because their argument is, well, they already have a security guard card and they did a background check then. And then they got their exposed firearms permit. And they did a background check then. Well, there's still a lot of things that maybe weren't uncovered in that background check. And that's why we go the extra mile, because we want to put the best quality person out there. So in terms of the cost that we incur with it, and in terms of the length of time that it takes us, that when we, let's say a security officer quits and we have to fill that slot, it could take us a couple weeks longer, because again, we don't just put some guy that just walks in for the interview in that position. We're very selective, and we feel that in the long run, we're putting a better quality person out there that would have less problems and getting less issues with the client and less potential concerns that we would have if he had to use a gun in some kind of or use of force or a deadly force incident. We know that we're putting the best quality guy out there is going to make the best decision.
So you're saying, and I know you don't want to get overly political about it, but you're saying you would be comfortable and think it's probably a good idea for anyone applying for a gun license to go through this mental health exam that your guys have to go through in order to get an exposed carry permit?
Exposed or concealed weapons permit. I have no problem with either one of them. I think that it would weed out some.
Well, no, sorry. I'm talking about simply a license to own a gun, period. Just an average Joe. If you want to have a gun, you got to get it licensed. I think every state requires license, I think. But most do anyway. Would you support the idea that in order to own a gun at all, you have to go through that test?
I would not have a problem with that. As long as, you know, the problem is, as you well know, when the crazy politicians get involved, they make it into such a convoluted thing and they make it into such a lengthy process. And really what they're trying to do is discourage you to buy the gun. But if all they had to do was take an assessment and that assessment was reasonable, it took maybe half an hour to take the test, and then it gets evaluated and it determines as part of the background check that you don't have any mental illness, you don't have any issues that we would be concerned about you having the gun, of course I would be in favor of that.
And what you're saying, just guesstimating, if I'm hearing you right, that you think maybe half the people applying for that license might fail that test. And we'd have half as many people buying guns as we have today because half of them are going to fail that test.
Well, it's a little bit different. The test that is done with the security, BSIS, Bureau of Security Investigation, that test is done very differently than the test that we use through the person that we administer the test through. So maybe there's got to be a balance in there. And our standards of hiring somebody are a lot higher than if, you know, that somebody should have to be required to just to buy a gun. Because we're actually putting an armed guy out in the field and he has to make decisions on protecting our clients. And those decisions have to include, use of force, deadly force. Obviously, they carry pepper spray, they carry batons, so they have some force options. But just buying a gun, I think there could be a little bit, more relaxed assessment that would just get the basics of whether there would be some extreme reason why they couldn't buy a gun to stop them from buying the gun. The standard does not have to be as high as when we're hiring somebody to be out there in the public with a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So bottom line, we're probably looking at catching at least 10%. I mean, at least 10% of people who apply would probably, if you gave them some type of mental health check, might fail that check. And if that's what it was,
I would say 10 to 20%.
Mm-hmm. And guess who would have been included in that 10 to 20%? The a-hole who just shot up people yesterday and the a-hole that shot up people at Uvalde and the a-hole who shot up people in Buffalo, none of them would have gotten guns.
Well, here's the other thing, and this is what the whole the country is not focused in. Whenever you have a mass shooting and you have like this guy that in Illinois or the one in Texas, here's what happens. We need to stop these before there is a shooting. And so they're what we call pre-indicators. And the pre-indicators are when you look at the video that he had online, the video said things like, there's a wave pulling me under. I know I have to do this. I don't care. Need to leave now. What does that mean? Does he need to leave this earth? I have to do this now. What do you mean do this now? What are you going to do? Shoot somebody? I'm ready to be awakened. I'm sleepwalking. Something's going to happen soon. So these are little indicators. And there were pictures of guns and there were pictures of, him standing, like a cartoon blood. So a psychiatrist and a psychologist would be able to examine these types of communications ahead of time, because all these mass shooters give all these indicators ahead of time. And some of them come in contact with law enforcement. The one in Buffalo, he had contact with law enforcement. He had a mental health evaluation, and all the signs were missed. And that's where we need to really focus on that and stop running around trying to do the gun laws and stop running around while praising about the response once the shooter makes the attack. I want to teach stop the shooting before it happens, stop the guy operational versus when there's a shooting occur, here's what to do and here's how do you evacuate and whatever. I think we're missing the entire boat here. And that includes parents training and parents understanding, looking for signs in their children, the behavior of their children. And some of this could be stopped rather quickly just by reporting it ahead of time. And there have been cases where parents reported a son because he was acting a little crazy and goofy.
Yeah. Well, but I also think you're onto something because as far as I can tell, at least these last two shootings likely would have been prevented by having this mental health check before you get the gun, because, you know, it's once they've got the gun, it's kind of hard to track everybody who's got a gun and pay attention to everything that they say and do and put on social media. But when the gatekeeper, in order to get the gun, is going to run them through a nice little mental health check, and these a-holes are going to fail it and not get the gun to begin with. Now, maybe he would have found another way to get the gun. Who knows? But bottom line, these guys are getting the guns legally. They're screwed up, effed up a-holes, and they're not getting any mental health check to get the gun to begin with. Now, you know, maybe NRA folks will go nuts over the idea of, oh, we don't want to give the government the ability to determine whether we're sane or not. You know, I guess I understand that argument, but I don't know. I like the mental health check idea that you've presented.
Well, there's other training that could be done, training of security officers, training of police, training of people that can recognize these behaviors ahead of time. I've managed a lot of threats over the years, and this is the common thing I get from law enforcement. So I get somebody gets a threat and it's a phone threat and they say, I'm going to kill you, or, you know, or they send some kind of correspondence. We report it to the police, and you know what the police, it's a long process till it finally gets to the DA. DA decides, am I going to file on this? But here's also what they say to me every single time. And it is the most frustrating thing. Call us when something happens. And so law enforcement, and this is going to take, it'll never happen in my lifetime. Law enforcement has to learn to become proactive versus reactive. Private security is proactive. Law enforcement is reactive. We cannot wait. You know, there are plenty of times where if they just did a field interview and they found out that this guy's a little screwed up and maybe he was bullied and maybe the parents treating him bad, sometimes that cop or that security person can become the best friend of the bad guy and know what's going on with the bad guy and be supportive of the bad guy, not the supportive that they wanted to go carry out an attack, but supportive in terms of trying to be friends with him, trying to get him help and find out what's going on in his mind. Because in the time that I've managed threats, plenty of times the bad guy thought I was his best friend. And all I was doing was protecting my client. And I've served restraining orders in mental institutions with five psychiatrists telling the bad guy, don't sign this restraining order, get a lawyer and fight it. And the guy says, no, I made the threat to this celebrity and whatever. And he turned around and he says, I like Kent. And he signed the restraining order. And so
interesting.
There are ways, yeah, well, you can kind of, you know, find out what's in the mind of these young kids today that are struggling and having problems. And I think you can,
there's just, I got to interrupt Kent to take our last break. I apologize, but,
No problem.
I love what you're saying. It's just, there's a lot of those type of kids out there. That's going to take a lot more policing. We'll be back with our final segment with Kent Moyer, CEO, World Protection Group, on the James Bressel Show, TNT Radio.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio.
TNT. Journalist and publisher Julian Assange celebrated his 51st birthday on July 3rd. This marked the fourth birthday that he has spent inside Belmarsh Prison, also known as the Guantanamo of the UK. Supporters across the globe marked the occasion with actions taking place in more than 35 cities worldwide. On Friday, the legal team representing the WikiLeaks founder in his extradition case in the UK has filed an appeal at the High Court of Justice following the approval of the extradition request by UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. As reported by journalist Kevin Gastula, there aren't many details his attorneys can share until the High Court decides whether to create a hearing or not. Once again, the case and Assange himself are left in legal limbo as this process drags out. This is Misty Winston for TNT Radio.
Forget your mobile and what's the worst thing that can happen? You have to find the last payphone in Britain. Forget Valentine's Day, tricky one, but nothing a little charm couldn't solve. Forget that the dishwasher actually works a lot better if you turn it on and it's a few excuses about dodgy wiring. Forget to check the batteries in your smoke alarm, and maybe one night poisonous smoke fumes from a fire will drift silently upstairs and suffocate you or your family. Remember, test them every week. Push the button, not your luck.
News more twisted than soap operas.
Ugh.
And with worse actors.
I can't be serious.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are back. This is the James Preslow Show, TNT Radio. We are speaking with Kent Moyer, CEO, World Protection Group. Kent, before I forget to ask you, tell people how they can reach you if they're interested in more information about your group.
Our website is worldprotectiongroup.com. Our phone number is 310-390-6646. And we're also active on all the social media platforms.
Let's hit on a couple of these places. I assume that Shanghai and Mexico City, because you said you have offices, they are a couple areas of focus for you guys.
Yes. Yes.
So let's start with Mexico City and the state of that, because we know the cartels are bigger than ever, more powerful than ever. You know, we're hearing more and more travel alerts for Americans going to Mexico. It seems for the most part, the cartels are smart enough to stay out of the resort towns. So I assume you would say that those are still relatively safe. But Mexico City might be a different story. I've been there a couple times and was always alerted that you have to be cautious. But what's the current state of Mexico right now as far as travelers?
Well, Mexico goes in waves, and each of the cities of Mexico go in waves with the crime. So, for example, the border areas are right now the rough areas, and Mexico City's not that bad. So there are certain areas where we need armored vehicles. Obviously, we use, you know, people that are armed in our protection work. Kidnapping is an issue. Cartels are an issue. Corrupt law enforcement are issues, fake checkpoints where you think it's a law enforcement checkpoint, it's actually a cartel checkpoint. So there's so many different things. And, you know, and from an intelligence standpoint, we have to keep up with what are the hotspots right now versus, you know, when those areas kind of seem to die down, another area flares up. You know, you want to stay off the highways at night because, you know, that's where a lot of the kidnapping occurs, carjackings, things like that. So we, with COVID starting to die down, we recently had a detail in Tijuana. We had one in Mexico City the other day, and no problems in either of the details. We try to use agents directly out of Mexico City because, and you know, we have partners. We built 30 partners all over the world, and they're all vetted and they're all licensed and they have insurances and obviously have agreements with us. So the key is that I'll never forget, I guess the best thing, we were protecting a celebrity and his girlfriend down in Mexico City was, but it was actually an hour south of Mexico City where they were staying. And one of my guys who's working the protection detail sends me an article, and the article was about the security company that kidnapped her own client. So many times Americans, you don't want to be calling a Mexican company to hire security because you have no way to vet whether they're a legitimate and reputable company. So it's better to contact an American company that does business in Mexico and some other areas, also Brazil, you know, some of the same type of crime issues in Brazil. But you want to hire, you don't want to just pick up, you know, go on the internet and find somebody and then end up being with a company that could end up kidnapping you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your average Joe Blow American visiting Mexico. Obviously, we understand why celebrities would want extra protection and also can afford the extra protection. But Americans traveling to Mexico, I mean, it doesn't seem like I hear that much about crime against Americans down there. I mean, are Americans at risk of getting kidnapped for ransom? Let's just start with that. Is that really a risk for an average American tourist?
Absolutely. And I highly recommend that even if you're an average person, let's say we're doing business and you're going to Mexico probably 10, 15 times a year, I highly recommend getting K&R insurance, kidnapping ransom insurance. And, you know, policy, I have it on myself and probably shouldn't be saying this on air, but the reality is that a policy for just an average person may only cost you about $2,000 a year. And so if you're going down there on a regular basis, I highly recommend it, because if something happened to you, then a professional team steps in and manages that kidnapping. And, you know, we could sit all day talking about stories where, you know, a professional negotiator was managing kidnapping, and then, you know, versus the FBI, I had to bring the FBI in. Then the FBI contacted the person who made contact, and an hour later, the person was released. So it's a maze of very sophisticated layers of how they operate. And so even a protection team, if you were going down there doing a protection detail and your client was kidnapped, the protection detail does not have any training to be able to negotiate, you know, kidnapping. And, you know, that's where you want a professional team that would step in and do that. So so you have to watch. You have to be what I try to do is when I travel there, I travel in a very low profile manner. I don't wear expensive jewelry. I don't want to stand out. I want to blend in. You know, a couple of years ago, I addressed and spoke in front of Congress, Homeland Security, and all the police agencies in Mexico. And after I finished my talk, they all loved my talk, and they're all telling me it was the greatest talk out of all the ones we listened to all day. They had somebody from Scotland Yard. They had somebody from the State Department. They had somebody from Canadian Mounted Police. You know, a number of different places, and they wanted to do interviews with me. They wanted to be put in magazines. And I said, absolutely not. And so I didn't want to, because I didn't want to draw attention to myself. And then when I left and I was going home and I was going through their TSA at the airport at Mexico City, the TSA person said to me, you're a cop from the United States, aren't you? And somehow they found out that I was in law enforcement.
Hmm. Are kidnappings happening of Americans? I'm just curious. Are there stories of kidnappings of Americans in the tourist towns?
Yes. Not as much. Not as much. But it's usually somebody that gets involved with the wrong people. And, you know, maybe they're trying to buy drugs in Cancun or trying to buy drugs in Cabo, or they're at a strip club. And they get involved with, you know, which a lot of these strip clubs are all run by the cartels. And so they get involved with some girl, or they get involved buying some drugs or something. And then all of a sudden you find out later that they know where you're staying. They go after you at some point and launch an attack, or just launch a kidnapping. And it could be just a short-term kidnapping, and short-term kidnapping where you're released within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been my theory that the cartels are pretty smart.
Yes. A lot of this
cartels are pretty smart. Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. I guess I've been always thinking or hoping that the cartels are smart enough to know that they really ideally shouldn't mess with Americans, because you don't need to awake the sleeping beast of America and get America starting to crack down on Mexican cartels. So they're actually more likely to kidnap Mexicans than they are to kidnap Americans.
Well, they'll go after the Americans because they know they have money and they have the ability to get money out of a bank, or, you know, by doing it, you know, they can do the express kidnapping. So before 12 o'clock, at midnight, I get $500 out of a ATM, and then they hold you to after 12 o'clock, and then you get another $500 out of your ATM, and then they let you go.
Mm-hmm. And how does it manage to stay out of the papers here in the U.S.?
Because a lot of it is never reported, especially the Mexicans don't report a lot of the crime, so the crime figures are not accurate. And, you know, I'll never forget one of my first trips down to Mexico, and I met with the FBI in Mexico City, and they told me about a wealthy business guy from Seattle, Washington. Wealthy meaning like...
Oh, we got to wrap it up. I'm sorry, Kent. We don't have time to destroy. I got to wrap it up. They're giving me the signal here. But thanks so much. No. CEO, World Protection Group, Kent Moyer, thanks for coming on. You're listening to the James Breslow Show on TNT Radio. We'll have you on again, Kent. Thanks.